first thing that you might wonder is why do we have these different Buddhas? You can see here I've got the, this is the refuge tree of our movement. And it contains all these different figures, bodhisattvas, Buddhas, historical figures, so on and so forth. And of course there was the historical Buddha, Shakyamuni. So where do these other Buddhas come into it? Well, I think it's probably the case that these other Buddhas were developed over a period of time. It does appear that they were developed over a period of time. And I guess the followers of the Buddha used to visualize him, bring him to mind in order to try and imbibe his qualities. And say some of them perhaps felt that they needed to work on wisdom a bit. Or perhaps they needed to work on compassion a bit. Perhaps they weren't quite as compassionate. That was their weak point. Well, maybe they'd focus on the more compassionate aspects of Shakyamuni. And over a period of time, I guess that process would lead to these various different figures that we see now, where some of them are particularly concerned with meditative qualities. Others might be concerned with qualities of wisdom. Others might be a fearlessness or resolution or indeed compassion. So we have all these different qualities. Another question that could arise is, what's a Buddha and what's a Bodhisattva and what's the difference between them? I mean, in essence, there really isn't very much difference between them. Traditionally, some figures are known to be or referred to as Buddhas and others as Bodhisattvas. Buddhas are clearly enlightened beings, whereas Bodhisattvas are said to be beings that have reached the point of enlightenment but postpone the final leaving of our cycle of samsara so that they can be reborn continually to help other living beings. In practice, the difference is pretty arbitrary. It's just that some figures tend to be known as Bodhisattvas and some as Buddhas. We also have Arhats as well, which were the historical companions and followers of the Buddha. So, five Buddha mandala consists of five Buddhas and arranged in a mandala. A mandala being a circular arrangement of some sort. Carl Jung investigated mandalas as a part of his investigations and found them to be, quite interestingly, a common expression across all sorts of different cultures. They weren't just limited to Western culture at all. So it does seem to be something to do with our nature, a way of expressing things. It tends to be a circular arrangement with the central item, the most important item, the most significant item in the middle. So we're going to look at the mandala of the five Buddhas. And there are the five Buddhas as they exist on our refuge tree, not arranged in a mandala in this case. And each of these figures has a certain wisdom associated with them. So not only do they specialize in wisdom, but they have a particular form of wisdom. So it's sort of broken down to that level. In actual fact, each of these five Buddhas also has a consort, a female figure. And it's actually the females with which the wisdom is particularly associated. Male figures tend to be particularly associated with compassion. So let's move on to the first of our figures, who is Akshobhya, who, as you can see, is blue. His name means unshakable. And he is in the eastern quadrant of the mandala. Now, his wisdom is said to be mirror-like wisdom. Sorry, I'm not very good at pronouncing the word mirror. I've got a bit of a West Country thing. Mirror-like wisdom. So in that, you can look in a mirror, and it reflects, a nice clean mirror, anyway, and it reflects back exactly how you look into it, without any imperfection, without adding anything, and without taking anything away. So it's just seeing the thing as it is. And that's his wisdom. So there's no view, there's no prejudice, there's no personal predilection. It's just as it is, seeing things as it is. And I suppose if we were to think of a practical example, it could be something like avoiding jumping to conclusions. Sometimes we can hear a story or hear some tell of something and we can jump to a certain conclusion when we don't really know the facts. And we're colouring the situation with something that isn't perhaps there. So Akshobhya wouldn't be doing that. His consort is known as Lochana. And you can see that he has a number of different connections. He has the mudra of touching the ground, as Shakyamuni did when he was being tested by Mara. His particular animal that he is associated with is elephant. So you can imagine that kind of unshakableness of an elephant. His time of day is dawn. And each of these figures have a number of different connections, quite a number of different connections. And you can find out more about that in Vasantra's book, Meeting the Buddhas, including mantras and so on and so forth. So that's Akshobhya. So we'll move on now to Ratnasambhava. His name means jewel born. So he's the golden Buddha, the golden yellow Buddha of the south. His wisdom is the wisdom of equality or sameness. So he concerns himself with, if you're talking about humans, with a common humanity. So there's no preference or discrimination based on whether people are British or non-British or black or white or male or female, young or old. He sees the value of each individual as an individual. So you could, if you were to look for practical examples of that, you could think of the legal system as it should theoretically operate. So everybody is the same under the law. Or the health system, where again, everybody should be treated equally, regardless of who they are. He is the Buddha of generosity. And you can see in his hand there, his mudra, he holds out the wish-fulfilling jewel. He has infinite wealth, so he can afford to give to everybody equally. And of course, if we had infinite kindness, then we could afford to give kindness equally, limitlessly to everybody. So other connections, he is connected particularly with jewels. He's been connected with the earth element, horses, as you can see. His time of day is midday. And his consort has the name of Mamaki. So now we move further around the mandala to the west. And Amitabha, whose name means... Well, I've come across a number of different translations, but one translation is boundless light. So he's the deep red Buddha of the west. His colour is said to be the colour of sunlight through jewels. Now his wisdom is discriminating wisdom, the wisdom that discriminates, which on the face of it might seem to be at odds with the wisdom of equality. He tends to see the uniqueness of everything. So rather than seeing everybody as individuals of their own merit, he sees everybody as unique in their own right. And it could seem to be contradictory, but if you take as an example, I think all of us here are parents, aren't we? So we've some experience of that. But the way that perhaps you love your children, you all have love for your children in some way or another, but your relationship with each of your children is nevertheless distinct and different. So in a similar way, I think, you can have this wisdom of sameness and at the same time as a wisdom, a discriminating wisdom. In the Metta Bhavana practice, we have to work to find things to generate our metta, our loving kindness. We have to use our imaginations. We have to see the uniqueness in individuals sometimes to pull out those qualities that can help us generate metta. So it's perhaps no coincidence that Amitabha is particularly associated with meditation. So other qualities that are associated with this figure, Amitabha. So obviously we've got the colour red, we've got meditation, and we've got the creature that's particularly associated are peacocks. Now, the thing about peacocks allegedly is, and I don't know really anything about peacocks myself, but apparently peacocks will eat snakes, including poisonous snakes. And the myth of peacocks is that they get their beautiful colours in their tails from the poison of the snakes. So they transmute all the nasty, horrible poison into something lovely and beautiful, much like meditation. He's associated as well with the fire element, not surprising given the colour, and with sunset. Again, you know, and that sort of dark colour red, which is not unlike a setting sun. And his consort is known as, by the name of Pandaravasini. So we move on round the mandala, and we come now to Amoghasiddhi, who is a figure at the north of the mandala. And his name means something like unfailing accomplishment. He's, as you can see, he's a dark green in colour, but he's also something of a mysterious figure. His wisdom is all-accomplishing wisdom, that wisdom that's, that comes to mind, that provides whatever is needed to accomplish, to overcome any obstacles, to do whatever needs to be done. The wisdom that finds a way. He's particularly associated with overcoming fear, and he has a fear, a mudra of fearlessness there. But he also is associated with overcoming anything that might hold us back, not just fear, but any of our own limitations. Because often I think it is tends to be the case that it's ourselves that hold us back more than anything else, perhaps. So he finds the appropriate means. He finds the best means to get something done, which again is quite a practical thing, something that we all need in our lives. So it can be a bit of a feel the fear and do it anyway type of Buddha. So other connections, his time of day is midnight. His creatures that he's connected with are Garudas, which are half birds, half human, and fly about crushing cymbals. That's right, also known as Sheng Sheng, yes. He's associated with the air element, and his consort is Green Tara. So now we move to the inside of the mandala, the centre of the mandala. And we come to the Sun King, Virochana. His name means illuminator. Again, you get various translations of his name, so I'm not sure it's a literal translation, but it means that kind of thing. So he's the white Buddha in the centre of the mandala. He is something of a sovereign. He is a Sun King. And he sits between or top two roaring lions. So a very regal figure, regal associations. Now his wisdom is the Dharmadhatu wisdom, which means something like wisdom of the sphere of truth, which I like the sound of personally. Dharmadhatu is it's kind of the universe plus, really. The universe, the physical universe, plus anything else that you could possibly imagine, any other realms, any other forms of existence. It's the universe and beyond the universe. And so his is the wisdom of that. It's the ultimate wisdom. It's the enlightened wisdom, the wisdom that an enlightened being would have. It's like a universe of wisdom. And like the colour white is a union of various other colours, his wisdom is a union of all the other various wisdoms. He sees the true nature of reality. It's infinite, it's ongoing, interconnected, and an intermingling play of processes. So other connections, other than the lions, he's connected particularly with the space element and is considered in some ways to be outside of ordinary time. So he doesn't have a particular time of day. He's beyond, outside of that. And his consort goes by the name of Akasha Dateshri. So those are the five Buddhas of the mandala, the five Buddha mandala. So they can be rather inspirational, but also very practical. There's very practical ways that you can bring these images, these figures, to mind and to get inspiration in your own existence. I mean, the most obvious way is Amoghasiddhi, overcoming fear, which I know a lot of people have brought to mind in their time to when they're finding fearful situations, when they're beset by anxiety. So they used also in meditation or in reflection to try and imbibe something of their character, their characteristics, their qualities. As I say, to find out more, you can't go wrong by reading Vasantra's books on the introducing the Buddhas. And I think he's got a booklet as well on just the five Buddha mandala.
Yeah,
so it's not just you reaching out to enlightenment, but you can also view it in with these figures as enlightenment reaching down to you as well, trying to meet you halfway. Well, these figures here, the five Buddha mandala, I think it's a great way of building a connection between the natural rhythms of our life in our world here in this particular country, and Buddhism, which, I mean, I'm very fortunate, I think, in many ways, having this sort of natural cycle that we have in this country, which you don't have so much in countries like India, for example, or Tibet. You know, you might have different seasons, but not quite the kind of dramatic changes that we have here. And these figures, they fit in very well with that. So that Akshobhya, who is, you know, associated with the dawn, has been associated here with the beginning of the year, so in February, that sort of time. And whereas Ratnasambhava, who's associated with midday, has been associated with midsummer. And Amitabha, associated with sort of autumn time. And then Virochana is associated with the end of the year. Amoga City, fitting in between those two, around Halloween Samhain time of year. Whichever way which is very good because it moves around the mandala then in a nice order. But on the other hand, whichever way you place them, you know, there's always ways you think, well, perhaps does that quite fit? But they've got so many qualities. In a sense, it doesn't matter. They've all got sort of connections in various different places in various different ways. So there's no need to get, you know, too hung up about being a perfect match. But it's just bringing some way of connecting your everyday life with the world of the Buddhas, really. And they're a great way of doing that.